Hey, what's the most important thing in your enterprise? It's not your infrastructure, it's not your endpoints, it's your data. And if you're not protecting that adequately, you have some potential problems, and I'm going to show you with an expert how to avoid those. Stick around. Hello and welcome to another episode of CISO Tradecraft, the podcast that provides you with the information, knowledge, and wisdom to be a more effective cybersecurity leader. My name is G. Mark Hardy, and today I have with me on the show Ronan Murphy, and we're going to be talking about, well, all things data, but more importantly, for you as a CISO, as a security executive, how to up your game in terms of improving your protection of that most valuable thing that we've got in our enterprise, our data. Ronan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Excited for our conversation today.
Now, you've been doing security for quite a while now, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been in the industry for the last 20 years. So there's not a lot I haven't seen when it comes to cyber or data security.
Interesting. So as you look at that, tell us a little bit about your background. And so the audience can learn a little bit about what you've done.
Yeah, I've been involved in building security operation centers across the globe. I joined Forcepoint earlier this year as the chief strategy officer. So working with some of the world's leading organizations, helping them to implement data governance programs, helping them to operationalize AI, helping them to ensure that their most valuable asset, their data, stays secure. So it's a fascinating area right now.
Now, before Forcepoint, I think you did a little bit of founder type things at Get Visibility.
Yeah.
More about that. What turned you into a founder? Because I think a lot of us think about, like, I got a better idea. Maybe I can do something with it.
Yeah, I founded several companies over the last 20 years, all involved in cybersecurity. Get Visibility was a really interesting organization insofar as it was building technology to help organizations get visibility of their data, because data is a complex challenge. Unlike, let's say, vulnerabilities, a vulnerability for a hospital or a defense contractor represents the same risk, whereas data is non-standard. Organizations have different risk profiles. They interpret data differently. They consider the context of data. They look at it in different ways. So I built Get Visibility to help organizations to get exactly what it does on the tin, get visibility. And that company was acquired by Forcepoint, and now it is Forcepoint ESPM.
And then here you are.
Exactly.
Interesting. So when we talk about data and things such as that, what do we find out in terms of protecting data? What are some of the biggest mistakes that you think that CISOs and even organizational leaders make when it comes to protecting that?
Yeah, look, it's a really interesting question. If you consider the world we now operate in, we're seeing the adoption of AI across organizations, and it's very insidious, actually. AI, it comes in the form of agentic AI, RAG, SaaS applications, large language models, shadow AI, and all of these applications, the oxygen that they need to be effective is their data. And organizations assume that their firewalls or their antivirus are adequate, and in fact, they're not. It's becoming a complex area for CISOs.
Yeah. So if we think they're adequate and we're not, then it suggests that we're probably missing something in the first place. We're either trusting technology that can't be trusted, we're not implementing the correct technologies, or we're just not putting the whole picture together. Which do you think is the biggest one of those three?
Honestly, I think it's all of those play a factor in it. Up until now, I would say the role of the CISO was to build walls, right? To build big high walls and a moat around all of your data and keep it safe inside. Because of AI, suddenly you need to operationalize that data. So you're seeing that CISOs are having to look at the existing tooling that they have, their firewalls, their EDR tools, their identity tools, and say, well, we now need to supplement these with more capability to actually get visibility of our data. Because if we want to be on the coalface of technology, if we want to operationalize all of these new sophisticated tools, then we need to be in a position to serve up our data to make those initiatives work. So the CISO is moving from more, let's say, an enforcer or a builder of controls to now becoming a business strategist to help, the business to operationalize these tools.
And that is an absolutely key insight. And we have been saying on the show for years that security is the business of revenue protection. We were all about enabling the organization to go after new markets, to serve their existing markets, and then protect what they've got, rather than being the department of no, which says, sorry, you can't connect that. No, you can't have that. As you point out, AI is really a game changer. And what it's doing is it's now saying, hey, instead of I want to go down and grab a piece of data. Oh, let me go to my SharePoint. Let me go get this. Oh, let me go out and find this. We're saying we're going to make this all available. The AI is going to potentially, live in this area. It's going to distill out of it and then be able to answer questions, which really kind of sets almost a whole new type of a paradigm for the enterprise we need to protect. We started out, you had endpoints. And then we put something on a Novell network. And great. Then you could talk around the office and you had dial-up modems. Now, of course, everything's connected to the internet. We have no perimeter to speak of because of everything that exists from portable devices to the like and the use of the cloud. And so from that perspective, I've almost wondered if we were to do a zero-based review, that is to say, take everything that we've got. Someone says, hey, Ronan, here's a really wealthy person. Here's a gigantic check. And you can write in whatever dollar amount you need. What is your strategy? What should we be putting in for the enterprise of tomorrow to protect it that may not be present from a security perspective in the legacy enterprise of today?
That is a great question. So I think what you have to do is you have to consider the type of revolution that's taking place with AI right now. It's a profound revolution that's going to have very significant impacts on the way we work and productivity and so forth. So across the globe, we're seeing co-pilots appearing in every productivity suite. We're seeing agentic AI, we're seeing automation, we're seeing open source models. And the opportunity is staggering for every company. So companies, how they look today could look very different in 5 years. Back in the early noughties when the internet started kicking in, companies 5-10 years later were indistinguishable to what they were 10 years earlier. So there's a huge opportunity. 70% of organizations are now looking at AI and building AI. But there is a challenge, and that challenge is that for AI to be effective, you need to understand your data. And like you said, data is in on-prem, it's on endpoints, it's in Microsoft, it's in Google, it's in Oracle, it's in SharePoint, it's everywhere. But if you want to benefit from the staggering opportunity that exists with AI, you need to get your data kind of into a really good posture. So my advice to organizations who want to capitalize on this wave of innovation and transform productivity and build automation is understand where your data is, understand your intellectual property, your company secrets, your regulated content, and then be in a position to serve up these different data assets to the type of AI initiatives that you want to be successful and to give you a competitive edge.
See, one of the challenges that I face as a practicing CISO is that when I look at the desire to go ahead and identify and classify and label all of the data, there's two elements. One is that going forward, here's what we're going to do. But the hard part is I've got terabytes of information that has accumulated since the dawn of time. None of it's labeled. None of it is, we don't know where it belongs. And so you say, well, do you just give up and say, hey, we're just going to start moving forward and hope things slowly fall off the map? Is there a more mature strategy to be able to get your hand around understanding the data in the enterprise?
Yes, so the vast majority of that data lake is legacy data, but that's where the value is, right? If you want to drive insights and you want to build automation and you want to train agents, that's where you get the real value. And that indeed is a very significant challenge for organizations across the globe. I would say that data is incredibly valuable. It provides an amazing opportunity for your business, but also indeed it creates significant risk should you fall victim to a cyber attack, a ransomware, a double extortion, an insider threat, or you operationalize it incorrectly with an AI initiative. So where we are seeing a huge amount of interest right now globally is where organizations are saying, okay, how do we solve that data lake problem? How do we understand if we've got risk in there? How do we classify that data? How do we contextualize that data? How do we profile that data? And then how do we get that data into a position where we can serve it up for the different types of initiatives we want as an organization.
Now, does that require a retroactive picking up every single file, looking at it and saying, hey, Charlie, does this thing look sensitive? No, I don't know. Or is there automated ways to do that? And if so, the very thing, technology that's driving us, AI, seems to me to be the best tool to go ahead and go back and prepare it for AI.
Yeah, so what we did, I mean, in Forcepoint is we've been looking at this problem for many years, even before AI was, let's say, as mainstream as it has become in the last 36 months. And we really understood the complexity of this problem and the nuanced attributes associated with data in different industry verticals, healthcare, manufacturing, defense, retail, etc. So what we did is we built what's called an AI mesh, right, which is a whole zoo of small language models. And these models have one function, one purpose, that is to interrogate the contents of a piece of data, a document, and determine what that is. So what this allows customers to do globally is to look at vast data repositories and then very quickly and accurately contextualize what is inside them. So do we have data that's sensitive? Do we have data that's regulated? Do we have intellectual property? Do we have customer details? And then when the AI mesh has found these documents, you have the ability then to tag them, to profile them, and then to make some very informed and powerful decisions around what it is you want to do with that data.
That's fascinating. So this AI mesh, as you're saying this, I'm thinking, do I either do a batch process and say, hey, go and categorize my data lake, or do I do it real time where I go ahead and I reach out for something that I haven't reached at before? I can run it through this small language model. It'll go ahead and on the fly say, yeah, you can use this or maybe you shouldn't use this. Which approach do you tend to do?
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, we do both. So for example, right, I had a very interesting scenario a few weeks back where we were dealing with a large pharmaceutical organization, and their most valuable asset is intellectual property, because they spend, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars inventing new drugs and so forth. And they have very strict policies about who in their organization should have the ability to see intellectual property. Now, you can imagine tracking data can be a complex task because, for example, let's assume you're not allowed to see the intellectual property. Well, I could go into a document, I could copy it, I could paste it into a Slack channel or a Teams channel, or I could email it to you in an Outlook or G Suite. So what we do is not only is looking at the data at rest, which is in, you know, SharePoint or OneDrive or your S3 bucket, we also look at the data as it's moving through the internal, the inside of your network, right? So for example, should I paste that IP and send it to you? That creates an event, and that event in real time sees, oh, somebody is sharing IP with somebody that should not have access to it. So the ability to understand, interpret, and track data through an organization is now more powerful than it has ever been before.
And now I'm getting the value proposition that you're having, because if we think of data as being in a silo, okay, here, this is here, we got these, and of course in the U.S. government, we used to have silos of excellence. They don't talk to each other, but they're excellent inside. But their whole concept of protecting data was in a silo. Oh, I need to classify it. I need to go ahead and label it. And I need to control the access to and from that data. But that's only part of the problem, because what you've talked about is a more comprehensive approach, a more holistic approach, if you will, that says, hey, yeah, person one can read this data, but unless you have a way to detect if they're copy-pasting it someplace else, you've just lost all of your controls. So that says we need a bigger solution.
Indeed, right? But I think there's even an extra dimension to this which we should touch on, right? And that is most organizations for the last however many years, when you think about labeling or taxonomy that you associate with data, you might have 5 or 4 or 7 fields on how you classify that data, right? It might be internal, external, confidential, highly confidential, and so forth, right? The problem now is that with AI, you may be looking at trying to operationalize a new piece of software in your HR department, right? And in order to maximize your benefit from that software and realize an ROI, you want to give it all of your HR data, except disciplinary records and except payslips, for example, right?
Okay.
So suddenly what that now means is that you have to look at your HR data and say, well, you know what? We now need a far more granular taxonomy and classification because we need to label certain document types which we don't want as part of our HR AI initiative. So suddenly organizations are realizing that in order to be effective with their data strategy, they need a huge taxonomy of very granular labeling capabilities across different departments. And that's introducing a whole new conundrum and complexity for these businesses.
Now, if that is the case, and for I think for a lot of us that are listening in, we go, hey, wow, they kind of resonate. If I, in the organization you described, so you have HR, and maybe let's say more specifically, healthcare organization, HR department within multiple organizations.
Yes.
Do I start out with like a blank sheet of paper and then I have to figure them out? Or because you've got multiple clients, you see multiple things, you can say, here's a template. And this is going to roughly fit, but you might be 80 or 90% of the way there to miss for your own business needs. Which approach tends to work better?
Yeah, so we tend to have blueprints on what works for each industry vertical, right? So what's important in healthcare is different to what's important in the defense industrial base or in the financial vertical, right? In healthcare, there is a well-documented HIPAA controls required with data. Mm-hmm. You understand that the data asset that represents the most value is patient data and health data. And there's very clear laws documenting how you should be handling and storing that data. So off the shelf, we would be very sophisticated in terms of our AI mesh to discover health data, to profile health data, and to risk assess health data. So we take very much an industry vertical approach. So when we engage with these different industries, it feels like they're almost, you know, engaging with subject matter experts for their sector, because how you, like if you implement a firewall, right, for a retail organization or a finance organization, it's the same thing, right? It's a firewall. Data is a very different discussion. Data has a very different nuanced approach to how you solution around it. And that's where we have a huge focus.
Well, it makes me think that organizations that do mergers and acquisitions face a real challenge because, first of all, a lot of that M&A decision-making is done by the MBAs and the quants, and the accountants are saying we're going to make more profitability, we'll achieve some streamlining, effectiveness, and efficiency, and things like that. But rarely do you get sitting at that decision table, the grown-ups table, as I like to call it, the chief information security officer saying, what issues do you think we're going to inherit? What risk are we going to assume from a cybersecurity perspective? But what you're suggesting now is that this could be a tremendously valuable tool for anybody looking at an M&A to say, hey, we are using this type of a tool set to classify, organize, label, and then process our data to ensure that it's protected. I'm going to require that company, and in 6 months, we're going to be merging our data. I want them to have a copy of what I'm using, and I want them to get prepared so that when we show up, it's just a little minor tweak, and it's not a panic where you realize that these people are totally unstructured and unprotected.
So. It's a great point. And one of the most prevalent use cases I've seen in regards to M&A is where the company being acquired, in many cases, before they even announce it to their own staff, they want to make sure that they don't have insider data loss. So they don't want to have, you know, people who are worried that they might get let go, you know, raiding and pillaging the IP that they have as an organization. So we see in many cases, it's both the acquirer and the acquiree looking to ensure that they understand where all of that data is, how that IP is moving around, who's accessing it, and do they have adequate controls associated with it.
That's a good point. So let me go into a couple terms, acronyms that we have in our industry, and I want to make sure we define them because most people know what they are, but sometimes we get listeners on our show who are fairly new. DLP, data loss prevention. If we're trying to explain to an executive who's not an IT person, what does DLP do for my organization? How would you explain that?
Yeah, so like when you talk about DLP, I mean, it does what it says on the tin, right? It's stopping data being lost out of the organization. So it's like the, let's say, the bars on the prison cell, right? It's stopping someone breaking out with data. So it's DLP has been around for a long time. It's a well documented capability for organizations. And it's effectively at the edge. I mean, in Forcepoint, we will be the global leader when it comes to DLP. We've been doing it for probably over 20 years in terms of a capability.
Wow. So explain executive, it basically acts it, like either the bars or like a security guard is going to inspect packages on the way out of the building. If you're at a manufacturer, let's say you're making things, or a diamond mine, you don't want the employees walking out with free samples. And so at DLP, you're going to be able to go ahead and apply a policy that we get to reflect the business requirements that's going to suggest whether or not certain things can go certain places. For as long as the company has a well-understood policy of where things should or should not go, you can affect that at scale rather than have to manually pick up and, you know, hand me that floppy disk, let me read it, see what's on it, things like that.
Correct.
Now, how about the concept of a CASB, a cloud access security broker? That sounds like a cool term, but how would it get? Let's explain it to an executive first. What's it get?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's kind of what it says on the tin, right? It sits between the employees and the cloud applications like Salesforce, Office 365, Google Workspace. And it makes sure that data going out is safe. So, for example, if you want, you know, visibility into seeing what cloud apps that people are using, you want to ensure you have compliance, and making sure that your policies and regulations are being enforced. If you want to have kind of, you know, threat protection, that's where, you know, your cloud access security broker. So you implement your policies that you want as a business, and you make sure that the user and the cloud, that policy is being implemented.
Okay, so if I'm using some sort of a cloud-based service, you know, software as a service, you said you're protected against threats and things like that. Am I really worried about something coming back at me? Is there what type of threats does this help mitigate?
So, for example, there may be applications in the cloud that you do not want your users using. They're unsanctioned, and you may want the ability to block your users connecting to applications which could potentially be malicious. So
that makes good sense.
It's to decide, it's implementing the policies that you want to action as an organization.
Got it. So if I'm using, for example, Salesforce, and I've got a number of people that are connecting to Salesforce, we're putting contact data, we're managing and things such as that, what would a CASB do? How does that add business value to that process so that I could go ahead and get that purchase order approved when it comes time for budget review? Here's
So it's validating that, you know, this user can connect to that application. If somebody else remotely tries to connect to that specific application and they are not in your CASB setup, then that security checkpoint blocks them from accessing. Or another good example would be, for example, if someone tries to upload, let's say, documents to Dropbox that contain, you know, sensitive information, you can have the ability in your CASB to block them because it's outside the policy that you want as a business. So there's a lot of kind of different functionality with your CASB that you can operationalize in line with kind of the compliance, the governance and risk that you have as an organization.
Got it. So it really comes by, I think you said compliance, governance, and risk. It's
correct.
Not BRC per se, but it's kind of the same thing, which is what we want to do, is we want to ensure that the business can accomplish its goals with the least amount of friction, but with the least amount of risk that you are going to either compromise information, make bad decisions based upon what you have, the third element of that is lose information, where somebody comes in, disgruntled employee, and said, yep, there we go. Because I know that one of the concerns has always been in Salesforce is that if you tell a sales guy, well, you're being let go on Friday, what gets downloaded? The entire customer database. And Salesforce, I don't know, for me, it's still an enigma. I have admin rights, but I don't understand it because it's just very complex and it's interesting. So it would seem that if instead of trying to go off and become an expert at Salesforce and then become an expert at another app and then become an expert at another software as a service app, that if I had a CASB tool, I only have one thing I have to learn. It's tuned for me, for my organization. And then from that point, I can then mitigate everything else. And that would seem to be a much more efficient way to do this in the future.
You're spot on.
All right, good. I'm learning. This is helpful. I like to learn out loud sometimes. Hmm. How about another acronym? Data Security Posture Management, or DSPM.
Yeah. So the not that we needed another acronym in this industry. We're already all acronymed out, right? But data
We're going to have
spend.
to go to five-letter acronyms where you
Yeah,
buy
well, yeah.
more ones.
100%. DSPM is probably the fastest growing segment in the global cybersecurity industry right now. It's an incredibly exciting sector, and it's being driven by the adoption of AI, right? So all of a sudden, for many years we've been saying that data is the new oil, right? But with AI, data really, really has become the new oil. Organizations are trying to operationalize it, regulators are trying to govern it, hackers are trying to steal it. So overnight data has become incredibly important. And you said it in your introduction quite eloquently, but you can outsource the responsibility for your software to SaaS providers. You can outsource the responsibility for your platforms to PaaS providers. You can outsource your infrastructure to the hyperscalers, Amazon, Google, Microsoft. The one thing you cannot outsource responsibility for is your data, because everyone knows that it's high stakes poker. And if you get it wrong, the consequences are very profoundly damaging at every level. So data security posture management is the it provides organizations with the ability to look at the posture of their data and then make decisions. And when you think about the types of use cases that you can apply to your data, they're literally limitless. I mean, it could be risk assessments, it could be governance use cases, compliance use cases, InfoSec use cases, and data security posture management, the acronym, is designed to provide leaders, executive leaders, and InfoSec leaders and risk leaders to look at that data and then make decisions. How do we, for a really interesting one that we see a lot is, what is our Gen AI readiness? Are we in a position as an organization where we can turn on an AI application and serve up data that we feel has been, correctly discovered, classified, profiled, tagged, labeled? That's a, probably one of the most interesting use cases right now.
So when we're talking about posture, when we refer to data, we're not talking about sitting up straight, putting our shoulders back and things like that. But just to make sure that our listeners understand that, when you talk about data posture, what are we talking about here?
When you talk about posture, I let's say beauty is in the eye of the beholder. You will have the ability to decide what you want your posture to be. Your risk appetite, if you are a large bank, is different to if you're a small, mid-size, unregulated organization. And depending on the type of risk appetite that you have, you may want a different posture. So DSPM gives you that visibility across the data, across your cloud, across your network, to understand, is your posture good? Are you sitting up straight? Are your shoulders back? Are you is your tummy tucked in? Or are we slumped over with bad posture and we need to improve it? So it allows you to get that visibility, holistic visibility across all of your infrastructure, and then make decisions on where it is we want to start improvement.
Now, that sounds a lot more like operational requirements and security requirements. And so, who should own the DSPM in an organization?
That, again, that is a great question, right? We see many different stakeholders embracing DSPM, right? So there is some very profoundly powerful use cases from security. So, for example, if you want to operationalize DLP or DRM, digital rights management, effectively, DLP is like a bouncer in a nightclub. When the bouncer comes to work, the nightclub have to tell them what type of clientele they want to come in or to their nightclub, right? They have to be over 25, they have to be well dressed, and they're not wearing runners, right? That's like your DLP at the edge. DSPM is the brains behind the DLP. It'll look for all of the data across your organization, and then it will interpret what that data is based on the content, and then it will label it. So it's giving the bouncer at the edge, the DLP, it's giving that the intel on what can come in and what can go out, for example. So that use case would be specifically an InfoSec use case used by the cyber practitioners. But you may also see use cases where the data protection office may say, we would like to know if we've got risk associated from a privacy perspective, like GDPR or CCPA. So we do tend to resonate with both privacy professionals, cybersecurity and InfoSec. And then obviously GRC is a big one, and especially with AI. So depending on who the business asks about AI, are we ready as an organization to embrace AI, to operationalize it? You're starting to see now, faster than ever before, two departments which I always felt were siloed, being governance, risk and compliance and security, are suddenly coming together to try and, you know, mitigate the risk of AI, but also seize the opportunity.
Yeah, it's interesting because as we look at that, as I've rolled out AI, my requirement is I need a policy, and I pushed hard for a policy. I wrote a draft, I think it was February of last year. We finally got around, after all the chop chain, to having something. And then part of that was to say the understanding with the users that if we pay for it, according to the contract, they're not going to train on our data, and we maintain some sort of data privacy, going back to the GRC and the privacy folks. But if you use a free open models, then who knows? You're just going ahead giving stuff away. And so don't do that. Do this. And if you look at a world where today there's a lot of BYOD, how do you enforce something like that if you know that? And maybe this is out of scope for what we're talking about, but you know, I think of these as business problems. How do I make sure that if I got a controlled device, okay, I can lock it down really, really well. But if it's in my tenant, I have all control, it's an Intune, I can push a button and make it self-destruct. But if I'm in a BYOD world, does that scale over to that as well? Or am I kind of asking for trouble when it comes to AI and access to tools?
I mean, what you're describing is shadow AI. It's like shadow IT, right? It's where people are using AI applications within your business. And these are hoovering up data, which is, you know, potentially very damaging to the organization. And just back to a point you made a moment ago, whether you pay for AI or it's free, right? I look at the problem a little bit more at a granular level, insofar as even if you want to operationalize a product like Microsoft Copilot inside in the core of your network, right? They're incredibly powerful productivity tools, right? And I would encourage organizations to be, you know, evaluating them from a productivity perspective. But if you don't label your data properly or train it properly, you suddenly are giving an internal co-pilot access to data, and even your own employees could prompt it. And I could prompt it: what was your salary last year? Why were you sick last week? What's your disciplinary record? And if you fed that data into the co-pilot and you haven't labeled it properly, or it's been fed in there by mistake, you're literally, as an organization, one prompt away from a data breach or a data loss, right? So these tools, while incredibly powerful from a productivity perspective, also introduce very significant risk. And then to the second part of your question, when we think about shadow AI, that's even introducing more risk, because I don't know if you saw, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, OpenAI, ChatGPT, started getting indexed by Google, right? It's like terrifying. So you could go into Google and you could just Google your competitor and ask what data ChatGPT has been loaded up on your competitor. What queries have they put into ChatGPT? When you think about that, if you have shadow AI and you have data that hasn't the correct guardrails around it, or you're not tracking in real time, and it's finding its way into these models, you know, if you ask me, as a guy doing this 20 years, I'm more concerned about data loss in large organizations through AI than I am from the most prolific ransomware actors. I think you've more chance of losing substantial quantities of data if AI is not done right than ransomware actors. And I never, ever anticipated that is something I would say.
And heaven help us when we get ransomware actors using AI, which they're already starting to do.
They're already doing. I mean, the quality of phishing emails now is terrifying.
It is. And so what that kind of brings up another thought is that we have a lot of technologies out there. And you guys at Forcepoint have created some really amazing stuff. Of course, your background and things you've done with Get Visibility, et cetera. But it seems to me that the better the technology, the more likely the attacker is going to aim for the human, because that person, although we have all these security, hey, let me hold the door open for you. Well, the problem with that is that if the human opens the door for the bad guy, And we're seeing a lot of the click fix type of attacks for people who don't understand Windows and then say, oh yeah, I just do kind of a Windows R, a Control V, and an Enter to prove you're a human. And well, sure, it proved you're human because you just downloaded a script which calls a PowerShell script, which calls some malware that says, oops, your files are encrypted. Is there anything that we could be doing better to integrate our security tool set with our human education so that as this thing is enforcing, instead of just getting a block, you can't go there, is what I'd love to see is, well, you can't go there, and here's why you can't go there. So you go like, ah, I get it. Is that something that's being built into systems, or do we just gloss over that today and leave it a education company?
It's a very wide-ranging question you've kind of posed. I think there's many different moving parts to it, but I think, you know, education is just something that we have to continually do. We have to be cognizant of one very depressing fact, and that is, on a global basis, the bad guys are winning. Cybercrime is growing year on year in terms of the impact that it's having from a GDP perspective as an industry. It is, I think, you know, it's going out of all proportions. A lot of that is being powered by the bad guys' ability to operationalize AI with phishing and compromising users, like you said. But if you think about the modus operandi of the hackers, right, encryption really isn't that big a problem anymore, because companies invest in business continuity, business backup, business restore, and they can be back up and running very quickly. So what those hackers are now doing is they're saying, okay, let's compromise a user, like you said, with a phishing email. Then let's harvest their credentials. Let's escalate the privileges. Let's get in on the wire. But then we need to steal data, because if we steal data, that gives us the best ability to extort the victim, because they're terrified that these guys have stolen the data. And in many cases, and I see this on a weekly basis, the organization has no clue what data they've stolen, because in many cases they don't have visibility into that data, and that creates a very an environment of fear and uncertainty. So the bad guys now have the data and they can extort their victim. But what they can also do is they can also disseminate that data, and they can do second and third degree attacks on either the people in that data or the organizations in that data. So with all of that said, my fundamental view and my belief is that both from a cyber risk perspective, an AI operationalization perspective, and considering how good the bad guys are getting, everything is focusing on the data layer. So in my view, as an organization, if you go in and if you understand your data, you can then start making some very profoundly powerful decisions in the business. You can ask a question: what would happen if Ronan's privileges get stolen? Somebody gets access to the network using his profile. What damage could they do? And based on our data estate, how do we want to mitigate that risk? So having visibility of your data allows you to make very profoundly powerful decisions and take very important steps to hardening, I would say, your data security posture and also your risk, your governance, your compliance.
So you covered a lot of ground here already. And so I'm thinking, as we're getting close to the end of the show, if you were to sit down with a CISO who says, wow, I'm still listening and I'm taking notes and this is good stuff, what sort of plan of action would you recommend, or what type of action should they take to reduce their likelihood of having a significant data event?
Yeah, so I think the role of the CISO is becoming incredibly interesting, and I believe it's going to be one of the most important, it's a very important role right now, but it's a role for the most part where you're building walls, you're dealing with kind of risk. But I do believe, because of AI and because of the kind of revolution we're experiencing globally right now in the pace of innovation, and I said this at the start, the role of the CISO is going to evolve more into almost a strategy role, because the architecture, like zero trust architecture and best of breed firewalls and EDR tools and identity tools, they are well defined kind of use cases right now. It's very easy to procure these technologies, even in the marketplaces like with Amazon and Microsoft and so forth. I believe the role of the CISO is going to be much more focused on the data layer Because as they implement these various tools and hardening devices around our network, the business will come to them and say, listen, we want to build agentic AI for customer service. We want to build automation. We want to invest in RAG, retrieval augmented generation. We want to invest in robotics. But to do all of that, we want to understand, are we ready? Is our data in a good position? And the CISO is suddenly going to become the strategist that's responsible for not only doing the firewalls and the hardening and the security, but also making those decisions at the data layer. And my advice would be CISOs who embrace that challenge and that opportunity will become an incredibly valuable asset for organizations as they start to try and navigate this brave new world and the opportunities that are being presented by this incredibly exciting technology.
Wow, fascinating. So I think to get better at that, of course, we need to improve our skill sets. Now, I know you've got an upcoming event called Force Point Aware 2025. It's October 7th and 8th, but it's virtual, so I don't have to get in the plane and fly someplace. What can people expect if they went ahead and they attended and they dedicated a couple of days to Force Point Aware?
Yeah, we have some amazing speakers, and we will really be looking at, again, like you and I have spoken about today, the opportunities that exist right now with new technologies, the challenges that exist. We'll be discussing the regulatory landscape and the types of risks that are being presented to organizations. We'll obviously be drilling down into the types of innovation that now exist out in the marketplace. So there's a wide array of different world-class speakers participating. I think there'll be a lot of knowledge sharing and a lot of analysis of, again, both the opportunities and risks that are out there.
Yeah, and look, I pulled up right now. Ross Young, our co-founder here at CISO Tradecraft, will be there. He's right up there with Jen Easterly. And there's a handsome young man named Ronan Murphy, along with Sarah. So forcepoint.com/aware for those who are interested. I think that would be a great opportunity. You would appreciate this, though. I am going to be out of the country in Ireland. And I will not be able to do that. So I'm speaking at a conference out there called COSAT. So
excellent.
Any last thoughts that you have before we wrap up? Ideas that you'd like to leave our CISOs with?
I think the opportunity for CISOs right now to grasp this data challenge, it will significantly elevate their own value, whether it's in the company they work with now or as they, you know, maybe change organizations in the coming years. But I do believe it's a really exciting area. I believe the role of the CISO is going to dramatically change in the coming years. And undoubtedly, it's where all of the action is happening now, where the valuations are growing, where the opportunities exist, are at the data layer. But it is not simple. It is a complex challenge, but it is a super interesting one.
So I love your insights that we're going to become more strategic as we go forward. And we're hoping that people listening and watching to CISO Tradecraft, that we're helping people to do so with having conversations with folks like you. So Ronan, this was awesome. I learned a whole bunch in this show, and I got to imagine everybody else did as well. So for our listeners out there, if you're not already subscribed, please go ahead and subscribe to our podcast. And if you like us, give us whatever that podcast channel has, thumbs up, 5-star, whatever. Not that we're grade grubbing because we don't get paid money for that, but what does help other people find us. And so you can help other professionals in their CISO Tradecraft. Don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn. We have a whole lot more than just podcasts. We have a regular steady stream of high signal, low noise information that'll be of great value to you as a CISO. We've got a Substack newsletter. We've got a lot of tools that are available out there. So good luck to you on your career. Hopefully you'll be able to go ahead and make the Force Point Aware in October coming up. And as they say, you can go find that on the website. We'll also put that in our show notes. And so until next time, Ronan, thank you for being part of the show. And I love everybody out there. Stay safe out there.